Hello.
Welcome to the reading of the Ames Tribune for Friday, May 20th, 2022. I'm your reader, Steve Forrest. Okay, for our first story on the front page of the Ames Tribune, a story about Slater EMS gives back. Hands-only CPR training to be part of the appreciation event. Slater EMS is celebrating its 40th anniversary with a free pulled pork meal Sunday and a celebration that will feature medical helicopters and Iowa service dogs. The open house will be from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the log cabin at Nelson Park. The event will also be an opportunity to learn some life-saving skills like CPR and stop the bleed. A couple of us are stop and bleed instructors, and I'm a CPR instructor, said Clint Benetham, Assistant Chief of Slater EMS. The Slater Emergency Medical Services Department started in 1982. Slater is kind of a unique animal because EMS and fire are separate organizations in the town, Benetham said. The fire station is on Main Street, and we're over by the water tower. Chad Fleener, Chief of Slater EMS, said that when an accident occurred in Slater during a 4th of July celebration, people ran to the fire station for medical equipment. A car backed into pedestrians after the parade that day, killing one person and injuring three. The fire station had minimal medical equipment because we're separate, Fleener said. Slater EMS usually holds a pasta dinner to fundraise, but this year the group's goal is to give back to the community that has supported it for four decades. That's where the free meal comes in, and we want people to come meet us and talk to us. I met so many people who don't realize we're not part of the fire department, Benetham said. We haven't really done anything quite like this before, so we're trying to make it big. The meal will include a pulled pork sandwich, chips, and a drink. The meals are free. Donations will be accepted, but are not required. Funds will be used to purchase a new monitor. Slater EMS Tahoe and ambulances from transporting agencies will be on site for people to see. Helicopters from Life Flight and Mercy One will also be at the location, weather availability permitting. Dogs and staff from the Iowa Service Dogs will be at the celebration. Members will bring training dogs and talking with people about the group's services. The chief and assistant chief are also hoping the event will inspire more volunteers to join the Slater EMS, which currently has 8 members but is approved for as many as 12. Sometimes that cuts us pretty thin in our little volunteer department, Benetham said. We go out on any medical calls in the Slater, Sheldahl surrounding area. We are mutual aid for Huxley and Kelly. It could be anything from someone falling down to a cardiac arrest. Usually the first responder is at the scene. The medical care the EMS personnel provide is crucial. Although they don't provide transport services, they provide patient care and get the patient ready for the arriving ambulance. The care in those first moments can be a matter of life and death, and EMS volunteers quickly bring the ambulance workers up to speed with the patient's medical history and current status. In that first 5 or 10 minutes, we're treating any immediate life threats and getting them stabilized to get on that transport, Fleener said. Classes will be taught for Stop the Bleed, which teaches people how to react to serious cuts and other injuries where a loss of blood can lead to death. Those classes are free and will take place at noon and 2 p.m. Hands-only CPR demonstrations will be conducted throughout the event, and CPR certification testing will be available for people who have completed the online course. Email slaterems.cpr@gmail.com for registration information for the certification testing. Next story is the Iowa National Guard, Iowa State, Kosovo partner on cybersecurity. Iowa National Guard leaders affirmed the military partnership between the state and the Republic of Kosovo on cybersecurity specifically during a first-of-its-kind event at Iowa State University on Wednesday. While the partnership between Iowa and Kosovo is longstanding, and Iowa State has hosted dozens of cybersecurity competitions, said Doug Jabison, a professor of electrical and computer engineering at Iowa State, the inclusion of the Iowa Air National Guard and Kosovo military made this event different. The team of Air National Guard members participated but not compete alongside teams of high school students from Waterloo and students from Iowa State and Des Moines Area Community College. Kosovar military leaders were also present, including Lieutenant General Bashkin Jashari, commander of the Kosovo Security Force. Major General Ben Carell, Adjutant General of the Iowa National Guard, was also there. At the same time in Kosovo, and live-streamed at Iowa State, more than a dozen teams of Kosovar University students competed, with more Iowa Guard and Kosovar defense members participating there. Kosovo's Minister of Education spoke there, and Kosovo's Defense Minister was to deliver the pre-recorded remarks. The competition itself consisted of teams having to defend national wealth management companies they had built against cyber attackers. At one point, teams were asked to immediately get up and leave their workstations, what was called a fire drill, or a test for examiners to see how secure workstations had been left, such as whether passwords had been left visible. Our hope is yes, this is the inaugural event with Kosovo, Jacobson said, with he and others expecting it will become a reoccurring joint effort between military members and civilians to train against cybersecurity threats. It was Jacobson who reached out to the Guard and suggested the team up with students. He said the inclusion of the Guard and Kosovar Forces members was not related to the university's recent receipt of National Security Agency grant to develop cybersecurity talent. Colonel Todd Miller, commander of the Iowa Air National Guard's 132nd Operations Group, said of Kosovo, "We're here to shoulder and help them any way we can." Miller said that from a U.S. perspective, we cannot survive alone, and that there needs to be a cybersecurity collaboration, as the way Americans do business and global security is threatened every single day by enemies who have no boundaries. Russia's ongoing invasion of Ukraine added urgency to U.S. calls for domestic cybersecurity defense preparations. Lieutenant Colonel Eric Haug, commander of the Iowa Air National Guard's 168th Cyber Squadron, said the cybersecurity threats to Kosovo are more regional, including from Russia, but also neighboring Serbia. Our next story on the front page, funds slated for employer child care. Iowa companies can build or expand facilities or contract with providers. Iowa businesses that provide child care options to employees will be eligible for millions in new state grant money, Governor Kim Reynolds announced Wednesday. Most of the money, $20 million, will be available for employers to build or expand child care centers. The other $5 million will fund partnership between employers and existing child care centers. A company could use up to $250,000 to secure child care slots for the children of employees. The state will start accepting grant applications in June. Businesses must have a minimum of 75 full-time employees to qualify for either grant program. One of the top recommendations from the Child Care Task Force was to incentivize employer investment in child care, Reynolds said in a statement. This program will do just that by encouraging employers to help deliver child care solutions to their employees, thereby bolstering opportunities for recruitment and retention of workers. The $25 million grant project will use federal COVID relief money. Beth Townsend, Director of Iowa Workforce Development, said employer childcare options help Iowa businesses to recruit and retain the skilled workforce they need. It is vital to our economic growth that we provide parents with reliable and affordable childcare options, especially those who are looking to re-enter the workforce, Townsend said in a statement. Jillian Henrich, Executive Director of the Iowa Association for the Education of Young Children, said the grant program will hopefully offer parents more stability with their child care needs and reduce employee turnover. But Henrich predicted the state will still struggle to support its child care workforce despite the new grant program. I believe that Iowa will continue to have issues with access to quality child care unless we can recognize and pay the workforce like professionals with competitive wages and also make sure that this high-demand workforce also has access to affordable benefits, Henrich wrote. The employer grant program is the latest child care initiative spearheaded by Reynolds and Republican legislatures. Many programs come directly from the Child Care Support report released in November. Lawmakers passed a bill, House File 2198, in late April to allow 16-year-olds to supervise school-aged children without an adult present. The bill also increases the child-to-staff ratios for adult employees, allowing one staff member to supervise up to 7 2-year-olds or 10 3-year-olds. Another bill, House File 2027, would allow families who receive state child care aid to pay additional money to a child care center. Supporters of the bill said the changes would create more flexibility for child care providers and parents. Opponents warned that the new staffing rules would lower safeguards in child care centers, and they argued the additional payments would be a new cost for struggling families. Both bills have passed the House and Senate. They await Reynolds' signature. Democrats criticized Reynolds for highlighting a program that made possible through the American Rescue Plan, which Reynolds initially opposed. Okay, we're on to page 2 of the Ames Tribune. It's our COVID-19 story of the day. The latest data shows cases rising again in Iowa. Hospitalizations in state are also on the uptick. COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations continue to rise in the latest data update from the Iowa Department of Public Health and U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, released Wednesday. The number of people hospitalized with COVID-19 in Iowa rose to 145, making this the fourth straight week and with more COVID-19 patients in the state hospitals. Of those, 19 patients required intensive care for COVID-19 complications, according to the Health and Human Services Department. The State Health Department also reported 17 more COVID-19 deaths this week, shortly after the U.S. as a whole reached the 1 million COVID-19 deaths. Iowa's pandemic death toll now stands at 9,571 and is likely higher than that as it can often take several weeks for the Health Department to confirm and report COVID-19 deaths publicly. New reported COVID-19 cases increased again this week as well, up to 3,847 over the past 7 days, or an average of 550 per day, making this the fifth consecutive week with more cases reported than the week before. Last week, the state reported an average of 453 new cases per day. The actual number of people who currently have COVID-19 may be higher than that. People who are asymptomatic and don't get tested or who choose not to report positive at-home tests to the state health department would not be included in the count. About a fifth of those new cases were reported in Polk County, the state's largest and home of Des Moines. The rising cases have prompted the Des Moines Mayor Frank County at a meeting Tuesday to caution that the city may bring back its masking policy if cases continue to increase. The Omicron variant continues to fuel the rising case counts. Virtually all positive tests the health department has reported in May have been the result of the Omicron variant. It's the fourth month in a row that the variant has represented at least 99% of all positive tests in Iowa. That means getting a booster dose of COVID-19 vaccine remains important to preventing the worst outcomes, as boosters are particularly effective against Omicron compared to the standard vaccine series, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. We continue here at the Health Department and with all our community partners and the hospital healthcare system to promote vaccinations and boosters for anyone, said Noller Davis, a spokesman with the Polk County Health Department. Your best way to prevent yourself right now during a pandemic is to get vaccinated. On Tuesday, the Food and Drug Administration authorized booster doses of the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine for children ages 5 to 11. But most children in Iowa still have not received their initial vaccinations. According to the Iowa Department of Public Health, only 24% of Iowa children ages 5 to 11 have been fully vaccinated against COVID-19. That's below the national average of 28% and well below the two-thirds of Iowans 12 or older who are fully vaccinated, even though children of that age group have been eligible for COVID-19 vaccination since last fall. The latest COVID-19 numbers in Iowa. The latest data as of 12 a.m. Wednesday, May 18, 2022, compared to the previous Wednesday. Confirmed cases, 772,205, an increase of 3,847. The deaths, 9,571, an increase of 17. Hospitalizations, 145. Up from 124 1 week ago. Patients in the ICU, 19, up from 13. There's a story about the mobile home parks. Law provides more notice to mobile home owners. Rent increase is not limited, but residents will be warned sooner. Residents who live in Iowa's mobile home parks will receive a slightly longer notice of rent increase, or if their leases aren't being renewed, under a law Governor Kim Reynolds signed Tuesday. The new law, which includes several other tweaks to Iowa's mobile home park law, comes after years of residents asking for more protections from dramatic rent hikes that come with little warning. But the long-awaited legislation falls far short on key elements those residents have asked for, such as provisions that would limit the frequency or amount of rent increases. The real concern is private equity moving in and gouging Iowans, and this does nothing to stop that, said Matt Chapman, a resident of Midwest Country Estates in Waukee. At that park, rent has increased from around $300 per month to $525 per month since it was purchased by the Utah-based Havam Park Capital in March of 2019. Residents also pay for more utilities than they did under the previous ownership. Havam Park officials have said they needed to increase the rent to come closer to the area's market rate. But Chapman said the scale of the rent increase shows that residents remain vulnerable and need more protections. The Iowa Manufactured Housing Association, which represents the state's park owners, has strongly opposed many of the residents' main requests. It was the only group registered in favor of the law. Its leadership has said the law is an acceptable compromise that contains good changes for both landlords and tenants. Republicans have said the law, House File 2562, is a small win for mobile homeowners, one that helps fix inequities in Iowa's law that have favored landlords in previous years. But many Democrats accuse Republicans of caving to park owners and creating legislation that sacrifices meaningful changes to win the owner's approval. The lobbying group has successfully rallied against previous versions of this legislation that went further. Reynolds signed the legislation Tuesday without comment. New law comes as private equity firms increasingly buy Iowa parks. Housing experts say mobile homes are the most common type of unsubsidized affordable housing in the United States. Residents of mobile home parks nationwide have a median household income of $34,000, lower than that of other homeowners and apartment renters, according to a 2019 statistic from the American Housing Survey. 85% of their households qualified for food stamps, and one in three households includes a person with a disability. Over the past several years, several out-of-state investment companies across the country have purchased mobile home parks, at times dramatically increasing rent prices and adding new charges such as utility costs and service fees. Iowa law has historically placed no limitations on the amount of frequency or rent increases at the parks, as long as mobile home park owners gave residents a 60-day notice. Out-of-state investors owned about 25% of Iowa's nearly 550 mobile home parks in 2019, according to data analyzed by Leonard Sandler, a University of Iowa law professor whose students research mobile home park issues. Compared to other states, Iowa's mobile home park law has been weaker on several measures. A Freddie Mac analysis from 2018 found Iowa State's requirement had only 13% of its recommended tenant protections for manufactured housing residents, putting it below 32 other states. Some of the recommended protections that Iowa has been missing, according to the report, include a right to renewable lease, a 5-day grace period for rent payments, the right to sell a home without relocation, and a 60-day advance notice of the planned sale or closure of a mobile home park. Many residents have told the Des Moines Register they felt trapped with little resource for protection. Residents often own their home they live in but rent the ground underneath it. Since the homes can be expensive or impossible to move, residents risk losing their home if they are evicted or need to leave. Chapman and many of the state's other mobile home park residents have advocated for protections such as requirements for year-long leases, limitations on rent increases, and requirements for landlords to specify a good cause before not renewing a lease or for another term. The new law will lengthen the required notice period of a rent increase from 60 to 90 days, although it won't limit the frequency or the amount of increase. The law will also require landlords to give mobile homeowners at least 90 days notice if they are not renewing their lease, also an increase of 30 days. In addition, it will make several other adjustments, including giving mobile homeowners 12 months of legal protection against retaliation, the same amount of time apartment renters have from the landlords, including utilities in the definition of rent and making increases subject to the same notification period. However, no advance notice is required in situations where landlords don't receive 90 days notice of increased costs from utilities. Giving tenants legal remedies if a park owner is not providing essential services, such as running water. Requiring landlords to provide a general reason for refusing to accept new tenant who has purchased another resident's home at the park. Prohibiting landlords from requiring tenants to modify their homes in a way that would make the structures more difficult to move later. The portion of the law covering rent increase notifications and failure to supply essential services will go into effect immediately. Okay, we're on to page 3. This is a nation and world story. Biden hails NATO bids from Sweden and Finland. Leaders visit U.S. to discuss group and Russia. From Washington. President Joe Biden on Thursday hailed the momentous application of a once neutral Sweden and Finland to join the North Atlantic Treaty Organization in response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, as the three countries work to address continued opposition from Turkey for the two to join the alliance. Biden greeted Prime Minister Magdalena Andersson of Sweden and President Sauli Niinistö of Finland at the White House with handshakes and laughter as they met for trilateral conversations on the NATO Mutual Defense Pact as well as broader European security concerns. His administration has professed optimism for the applications to join the alliance, which would mark a significant embarrassment to Russia after its invasion of Ukraine. "They meet every NATO requirement and then some," Biden said after escorting his fellow leaders to the Rose Garden, "and having two new NATO members in the high north will enhance the security of our alliance." Russian President Vladimir Putin has demanded that the alliance stop expanding toward Russian borders, and several NATO allies, led by the United States and Britain, have signaled that they stand ready to provide security support to Finland and Sweden should the Kremlin try to provoke or destabilize them during the time it takes to become full members. "New members joining NATO is not a threat to any nation," Biden said in an implied rejection of Putin. "It never has been." The leaders' optimism for Sweden and Finland's application was set against lingering opposition from Turkey, whose president Recep Tayyip Erdogan said in Thursday video that he remains opposed to each of NATO's 30 member countries and has the power to veto a membership bid. Erdogan has said Turkey's objection stems from grievances with Sweden and to a lesser degree with Finland, perceived support of the banned Kurdish Workers' Party, or PKK, as an armed group in Syria that Turkey sees as an extension of the PKK. The conflict with the PKK has killed tens of thousands of people since 1984. Turkey also accuses Sweden and Finland of harboring the followers of Fethullah Gulen, a U.S.-based Muslim cleric whom the Turkish government blames for a 2016 military coup attempt. "I think we're going to be okay," Biden said Wednesday when asked whether he was confident he could secure their entry into NATO. After 200 years of military non-alignment, Sweden has chosen a new path, Andersson said, calling Russia's invasion a watershed moment, causing her country to rethink its security posture. Biden on Thursday announced that he was asking the U.S. Senate to approve the new NATO memberships, pending Sweden and Finland's completion of the ratification process. The required step was expected to receive overwhelming bipartisan support. U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said Wednesday that Finland and Sweden were working directly with Turkey to address its concerns and that the U.S. was also speaking with Turkish officials to try to help facilitate the resolution. So another story, a Russian soldier asked for forgiveness. It's from Kyiv, Ukraine. A Russian soldier facing the first war crimes trial since the start of the war in Ukraine testified Thursday that he shot a civilian on orders from two officers and pleaded for his victim's widow to forgive him. Sergeant Vladim Shishimarin told the court an officer insisted that the Ukrainian man, who was speaking on his cell phone, could pinpoint their location to the Ukrainian forces. The 21-year-old sergeant could get life in prison if convicted of shooting the Ukrainian man in the head through an open car window in a village in the northeastern Sumy region on February 28th, 4 days into the Russian invasion. Looking subdued, Shishimarin said he at first disobeyed his immediate commanding officer's order to shoot the unarmed civilian, but had no other choice but to follow the order when it was repeated forcibly by another officer. Shishimarin pleaded guilty to the charges during Wednesday's hearing. On Thursday, he asked the victim's widow, who also appeared at the trial, to forgive him for what he did. "I realize you can't forgive me, but I'm pleading you for forgiveness," Shishimarin said. The woman, Katerina Shelpova, said her husband, 62, went to check on what was going on when gunshots were heard just outside of their home. When the shooting ceased shortly after, she walked out and found her husband shot dead. The prosecutor asked for a life sentence for Sisha Marin, and the trial adjourned until Friday. You are listening to the reading of the Ames Tribune for Friday, May 20th, 2021, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now we'll turn to today's obituary. Today in the Ames Tribune, we have two obituaries. We have Esther Hansaker. Esther Hansaker, our beloved mother, walked home with her Lord on May 15, 2022, after 91 years of a long and fulfilling life. Esther Mae Winborn Hansaker came into this world the youngest of seven, born to John T. and Mabel Winborn on May 28, 1930, in rural Kelowna, Iowa. She grew up on the family farm and went to a one-room school in Sharon Township. In 1938, she contracted polio at the age of 8, which left her with a debilitating leg and foot issues. This was the start of her lifelong struggle with health issues. For high school, she moved from the farm to Iowa City with her parents and attended school in the much larger city school, finding it very hard to adjust. She went on to earn her bachelor's degree in home economics in 1953 at Westmark College in Lamars, Iowa, a small Christian college. This was the first class to graduate with a four-year teaching degree from that school. Upon graduation, her first teaching job was in Colo, Iowa. While there, singing in the church choir, her future mother-in-law saw a potential wife for her bachelor farming son. This was just what Esther needed, someone to take care of, and she was just what Wayne needed, someone to take care of him. It was a perfect partnership that lasted 50 years until his death. Esther has carried on managing the family farm until the very end. She was involved in 4-H as a leader and judging at fairs. Her faith kept her very active in the church and community. She was a member of the choir, Cloverleaf Club, UMW, and whatever area of need. She learned to cut hair by sitting in the car outside of the barber shop and watching. Wayne never had to pay for another haircut. There was always a large vegetable garden, canning, sewing all her clothes, her girls' clothes, and others. She loved to cook. If you ever stopped by the farm, the kitchen table was a place for conversation and homemade goodies. After retirement, Wayne and Esther took off in their motorhome to Arizona and Florida for 3 months during the winter. They were like little kids at camp, Wayne playing pool and doing crafts, while Esther enjoyed silversmithing and other crafts. She loved to visit and had a gift of talking and remembering people and their names. She touched everyone she met and always had something to say. To her, it would be a teachable moment. Surviving our daughters, Anna Hansaker of Davenport, Iowa, Marla Hansaker Turk of South Lake Tahoe, California, daughter-in-law Bonita Hansaker of Colo, her grandchildren Brandon Hansaker of Colo, Brooke Sellers of Colo, Jack Turk of South Lake Tahoe, California, her great-grandchildren Riley and Brady Hansaker of Colo, Campbell Sellers of Colo, her sister, Alice Thompson Vames, her sister-in-law, Margaret Hansaker of Colo, and many nieces and nephews. Esther was preceded in death by her husband Wayne, her son Rex Hansaker, 4 brothers, Everett, Milton, Walter, and Russell, her sister Lucille Williams. Memorial contributions may be made to Colo United Methodist Church and Nevada Story County Senior Care in memory of Esther. Rasmussen Ryan Funeral Home in Nevada is handling arrangements. Condolences may be sent to the family at www.rasmussenfh.com. Our second obituary from Ames, James Frederick Westfall, 83, died Tuesday, May 17th, 2022, at his home in Ames with his family by his side. Mass of Christian burial will be held Tuesday, May 24th, 2022, at 10:30 a.m., with visitation preceding the Mass from 9:30 to 10:30, and interment at Story Memorial Garden following Mass. Jim was born in Buffalo, New York on January 31st, 1939, to Catherine Esther Hawker and John August Westfall. He grew up in the Western New York area, and having an artistic bent, he graduated from State University of New York at Buffalo with a degree in art education in 1960. Jim then became a firefighter for Tonawanda, New York for 14 years, where he rose to the position of captain. He became a fire service instructor at Iowa State University, retiring in 1993. Jim was then business manager at St. Celia Catholic Church for 4 years. If you were to stop in at Jim's home, you might find him playing the organ and singing along with his beautiful voice. You might also find him working on and running his model trains or baking a cherry pie or sinmin kuchen. Jim is survived by his wife of 57 years, Elaine, daughters Christine Ann Sykes, Teresa Lynn Hawks, and Leanne Marie Jennings, grandchildren Matthew, Taylor, and Drew Wilson, Katie, Megan, and Brianna Jennings, and Adam and Jeremy Hawks, great-grandchildren Elliot Small and sister Joan Westfall. In lieu of flowers, donations will be made to the St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. The Westfall family would like to thank all the staff at Mary Greeley Hospice for their attentiveness and loving care. Online memorial at www.ankenymemorial.com. Okay, here's a story for all you cookie lovers. If you're a cookie addict, rejoice. Crumble Cookies plans to open first Ames location. Bart Kuhn and Red Anderson were both avid consumers of Crumble Cookies before they became franchise owners. Now they're planning to open their second Central Iowa location in Ames in the next few months. Kuhn's wife introduced him to the pink box of cookies, for which the company is well known. They weren't just cookies, they were big cookies, he said. Warm cookies, fresh out of the oven on the warm cookies, and chilled cookies for the ones that are chilled. Each cookie weighs north of a third of a pound, so they're really big cookies, and I just thought they were delicious. What Kuhn wasn't immediately aware of was that rotating menu of more than 200 specialty flavors, with 5 different varieties offered each week. Crumble's warm milk chocolate chip cookies remain on the menu every week. Kuhn showed up at a Crumble cookie store and tried to buy more of the flavor he'd gotten from the pink box. I asked what happened to that red velvet cookie with the white chocolate chips, and they said that they're not here now, but will probably come back in a couple of months or so, he said. Instead of the red velvet, he was introduced to the cinnamon swirl cookie. I was like, oh my gosh, these are so good. They're big and they're good. That's how I started getting addicted to the Crumble cookie, he said. Anderson's exposure to Crumble cookies was oddly similar to Kuhn's. His wife got a pink box of cookies as a thank you gift. We opened it up, and I started taking little slices of the cookies, and I said, those go in our bedroom. We are not sharing these with the kids. Learning more about the Crumble Company, both men were impressed with the mission to have a fresh menu every week of freshly baked cookies. Cookies are baked daily from scratch, and cookies that aren't sold within 2 hours of being baked are donated to worthy causes, such as fire and police departments, hospitals, and schools. Our cookies are made from scratch. They're not a frozen dough that we're throwing out. We're bringing in the flour, the butter, the sugar, the vanilla, the cream cheese, everything, Anderson said. Anderson's son, Ty Anderson, is the operating partner for the local site. He and his wife, a child, and another on the way are living in Ames. Ty is my firstborn. It's very exciting to be working with him on this, Rhett Anderson said. Crumble Cookies franchise requirements to have a store owner operate living in the community is important to Anderson and Kuhn. It's one of the things I love about Crumble Corporate, Rhett Anderson said. On the side of each box of cookies, it states that we are about bringing together family and friends over the best box of cookies in the world. It's about local people coming together. The Ankeny location opened to a long line of customers. Crumble Cookies will be located at 414 South Duff Avenue, and the franchise owners hope it will be open before the school starts in the fall. The location, next to Pepper Jack's Grills, was formerly Gary Thompson Oil Company. We're really excited to be coming to Ames, Kuhn said, and we feel extremely fortunate to have been able to get the location on South Duff. Kuhn and Anderson have the franchise rights for the Ames and Des Moines metro area. Another store is planned for West Des Moines after the Ames site opens. Their first location opened in Ankeny in January to two-hour-long lines of excited cookie customers. The store down in Ankeny has been doing fantastic, and we're hoping for the same type of response up in Ames, Kuhn said. They anticipate the remodel of the Duff location will take about 4 months, but acknowledge that could be affected by supply chain issues and labor constraints. Both residents of Utah, the home state for Crumble Cookies, Anderson and Kuhn said they're impressed with the friendliness, kindness, and support of Central Iowa residents. The Des Moines Metro and Ames are really a gem in the Midwest of people and enterprise. It's been great for us. We love it there, Kuhn said. Every Crumble Cookie store has an open kitchen so customers can watch the baking process. Crumble was founded in Logan, Utah in 2017. In 5 years, it has grown to be the largest cookie company in the nation as well as the fastest growing restaurant franchise, according to a news release. The franchise has more than 370 locations in over 40 states. Okay, let's turn to the sports section. Men's college basketball recruiting. Major ISU target Billu announces top four options. One of Iowa State men's basketball's primary 2023 targets has announced his top four options, and the Cyclones have made the cut. Omaha Billu, a consensus five-star forward who grew up in Iowa but played his junior season at Link Year Prep in Branson, Missouri, announced Tuesday night that the final four options he's considering are Iowa State, Oregon, Kansas, and playing professionally with G League Ignite. Iowa State offered Billu back in July and is the only school in his final group that he has visited since then. The versatile 6'8" athlete who played his first two high school seasons at Dowling Catholic and Waukee has unofficially visited Iowa State three times. The first came last June, the second for Cyhawk football game September 11th alongside signees Tamman Lupi, Demaron Watson, and Eli King, and the third on December 21st for Iowa State's win over Chicago State. He also unofficially visited Kansas last June. Okay, let's read one about the Ames High School girls softball. How Ames plans to muscle way to state. Ames hopes a lot of extra time spent in the weight room and an added year of experience will pay off in a big way headed into the 2022 softball season. The Little Cyclones went 20-20 last year and finished fourth in the loaded CIML Iowa Conference with a 9-11 record in head coach Megan Von Baron's first season. With all but one starter returning, Ames has expected big things this summer. We feel more confident going into this season knowing what to expect, Von Baron said. We've got everyone back but one player from last year. I think that's going to give us a big advantage. We're really looking forward to state. The primary reason Ames hopes to make big jump is all the work the girls put in during the off season. Last year, Ames had plenty of success at the plate. The Little Cyclones scored 240 runs and hit 325 as a team. But with several months of building strength and hitting the batting cages, the Little Cyclones expect to take their offense to a whole new level in 2022. We've gotten a lot stronger, Ames first baseman Olivia Smalley said. We've all been in the weight room a ton this off season, and with all the hitting we've done, I'm really excited to see how we do in games when it comes to scoring runs. Smalley enters her season year coming off a 2021 season in which she hit 395 with 9 doubles, 8 triples, 3 home runs, and 36 RBIs. 6 other Little Cyclones hit over 300 a year ago. Junior shortstop Ellie Lynch hit 392 with 40 steals, 39 runs, and 24 RBIs last year. Junior center fielder Ireland Buss hit 357 with 7 home runs and 33 RBIs, and senior pitcher Alexa Kopaska hit 354 with 2 home runs and 17 RBIs. Freshman outfielder Kaylee Mercer hit 323 with 25 runs and 17 RBIs as an eighth grader. Sophomore third baseman Katie Risselman hit 317 with 4 home runs, 17 RBIs, and junior outfielder Allie Franderson hit 306 with 13 steals and 24 runs. Freshman Nora Norkin could be counted on to help out in the outfield, and Mesher could also spare Anderson at catcher during the season. Second base is the only position Ames needs to fill on the infield. Looking to replace Rachel Rossacker will be Thielen, junior Mia Vogel, and freshman Sydney Smalley. Ames also expects its pitching staff to receive a big boost. Kopaska was the primary pitcher a year ago, and Lynch Thielen and Sydney Smalley all return with experience. As a pitching staff, we put in a ton of time. We've been pitching 3 days a week since the end of the fall sports season, Kopaska said. We've picked up a lot of miles per hour and new pitches as a group. We feel everything we are doing last year has been elevated. We feel we have the strongest four-person staff in the state. Kopaska was 12-11 with 4.85 ERA in 138 two-thirds innings a year ago. Thielen went 4-for-6 with a 6.32 ERA in 58 and two-thirds innings. Lynch went 3-2 with a 3.72 ERA in 32 innings, and Smalley was 1-0 in 13 and two-thirds innings. Ames will face a daunting schedule in its final year as member of the CML, defending Class 5-8 state championship Fort Dodge and runner-up Ankeny Centennial are both in the conference. We play those two teams 4 times each, Von Baron said. I think the 3 of us are going to be vying for those top spots. Last year, Ames had a short run in the 2021 postseason. The Little Cyclones suffered a tough 11-10 loss to eventual state qualifier Southeast Polk in the 5A regional semifinals. At the end of last season, I felt like we hadn't lived up to our potential, Kopaska said. We knew we could have beaten Southeast Polk, and we had already beaten Johnston. It felt like we came up short, and we don't want to feel that way again. The Little Cyclones plan on their postseason lasting a lot longer this time. They have their sights set on Fort Dodge. Okay, here's a quick story about Gilbert Girls Golf. Gilbert heads back to state. The Gilbert girls golf team left no doubt they'll be returning to the 3A state meet this record-setting performance to the 3A regional meet held at the Terrace Hill Golf Course in Altoona Wednesday. The Tigers, last year 3A state runner-up, shot a school record low score of 319 over 18 holes. They won its regional title by 48 strokes over ADM. Eden Lorbach, last year's 3A state individual champion, was the medalist at Adel. Lorbach carded a 68 with 2 9-hole rounds of 34 to beat Newton's Riley Hayford by 2 strokes for the final for the first individually. Macy Underwood took 3rd individually for Gilbert with a 76. Haley Lohman came in 5th with an 81, and Sydney Lynch placed 15th with a 94 to wrap up the Tiger scoring. Macy Underwood took 3rd individually for Gilbert with a 76. Haley Lohman came in 5th with an 81, and Sydney Lynch placed 15th with a 94 to wrap up the Tiger scoring. Underwood and Lunan were both individual state qualifiers. Josie Dukes was 21st with a 99, and Connie Chen took 27th with a 102 as the other Tiger golfers competed at the meet. Nevada finished 4th in the team standings with a 378. Olivia Axmere was an individual state qualifier for the Cubs with a 4th place score of 79. Bridget Cahill took 12th with a 91, and Reagan Schmidt 26th with a 101 for Nevada. McKinley Spade shot a 107 for the Cubs. Ballard placed 8th out of 12 schools with a 316. Maddie Kelschmeyer paced the Bombers with a 24th place score of 101, and Elia Thompson came in 30th with a 103. Okay, here's our Friday Outdoors column. Beware of the carrion factor. Naturally speaking, the eagle had food spotted and was timing its approach carefully. Timing was crucial because the food was in the middle of a busy interstate loaded with cars and trucks traveling at 70 miles per hour and more. We watched with mixed awe and fear as the eagle swept in to grab its target before the next vehicle flashed by. It missed, but was setting up for another attempt as we drove past. The seemingly desperate gamut to grab that morsel of carrion, something dead, from the busy highway was no doubt driven by the need to feed its growing young. I hope it was successful and didn't become carrion itself in the process. Our highways are a food source and death trap for many birds, many kinds of birds and animals. Many species end up as vehicle-killed carrion. Wildlife is drawn to the highways for other reasons, too. Vegetated road ditches are often the only permanent cover across miles of empty farm fields. Grassland birds attempt to nest there when no other habitat options exist. Small mammals live there for the same reason. Raptors and other predators often hunt there because those narrow linear corridors are the only place they can find their food. Cold-blooded snakes are drawn not only to the mice that live in grassy ditches, but also to the warmth retaining in the roadways during cool spring and fall evenings. Creatures that are killed become an additional attraction since carrion is viewed by many species as food. Many predators, and pretty much all omnivores, are opportunistic feeders that consume whatever is easiest to get, whether food found dead or caught alive. The eagles seem to realize that those speeding vehicles were dangerous, but not dangerous enough to prevent it from trying for that morsel of carrion. That kind of risk-taking killed an eagle on U.S. Highway 30, east of Nevada, some years ago. I once came within a few feet of hearing an eagle flying off to a deer carcass in the ditch west of Gilbert. Hunger, or the need to feed hungry young, is a powerful incentive. It's often enough to overcome a wild creature's natural wariness of noisy speeding vehicles. Top predators such as raptors or coyotes often getting hit on highways most of the time, but sometimes press their luck too far. Turkey vultures and crows are pretty good at avoiding vehicles while picking up their share of the carrion. Pity the slow movers, though. Skunks, raccoons, possums, or warmth-basking snakes seldom get out of the way in time, even when they see a vehicle coming. Many of them feed at night, and approaching headlights seem to confuse them to the point that they may not even try to get out of the way. Many animals are moving right now, Does are seeking scattered hiding places to have their fawns. Predatory birds and animals are feeding hungry young ones. Pheasants hate being wet and head for road shoulders to get dry on dewy mornings. Rooster pheasants are suffering from an outbreak of seasonal testosterone poisoning. It muddles their brains and causes them to throw caution to the wind. They boldly sit in the open, often on roadways, where they can best be seen to show off for hens. Don't risk an accident, but avoid killing these road-loving creatures when you can. It's the carrion factor. Road-killed creatures attract more creatures to the road where they, too, are likely to be killed. Well, that does it for today's reading of the Ames Tribune for Friday, May 20th, 2022. I'm your reader, Steve Forrest. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thanks for listening.